You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS
and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, April 7th, 2016. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Felix Salmon, a fusion on the Panama Papers, the unprecedented, I don't know, I guess that's a question for Felix, is this unprecedented, this document dump of offshoring accounts, money laundering, tax evasion, evasion of international sanctions? Also on the program today, clutch your pearls, ladies and gentlemen. The gloves have come off. Apparently, the Democratic primary in full swing. Meanwhile, the media's obsession with Trump quantified. Koch brothers want Paul Ryan. And Long Island, New York, wants a wall. Will North Carolina lose the NBA All-Star game? That's what Charles Barkley wants, based on their recent hate legislation. I don't know if we covered this yesterday, but now there's a one of the top state lawmakers. We'll talk about this. He's blaming the mayor of Charlotte for forcing them to write a bigoted, discriminatory law. And more on those Planned Parenthood video hoaxers. They got raided yesterday by California officials. And largely because, I'd love it, a private litigation, a tort, if you will, against them, against those hoaxers from Planned Parenthood. And Denny Hastert, turns out, I don't know if anybody should be surprised about this, three more people are accusing him of unwanted sexual assault, or I should just say sexual assault. Implicit, I guess, if not explicit, when they were younger. And Denny Hastert is, you know, what's amazing to me about that Denny Hastert story is we don't know if, I mean, I don't know. Maybe, Matt, you got to tell me about this. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but has there been a, never mind exhaustive, have there been any like real legitimate journalistic endeavor to find out if members of his own caucus had any knowledge of this? I mean, there were, I know there was rumors and et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, I don't remember any type of real in-depth reporting on what people knew when he was the Speaker of the House, the head of the Republican Party in the Congress.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything definitive on it.
I don't know. I don't recall, but it wouldn't be surprising. God knows what they're hiding about Ted Cruz, even. And they hate Ted Cruz. Let's just play a quick sound. You know, Trump was in Long Island. I'm trying to find out where he's going to be next. I would have gone last night if I had not been flying solo and then gotten called to do Hayes. And we'll put up a clip of my appearance on All In on YouTube after the program today. We probably won't play it because it covered a lot of grounds, the same grounds that we covered on the program yesterday. And we're going to get to the qualifications gate, as Matt calls it. But I want you to listen to this sound from this Trump rally in Bethpage, New York. Understand, Long Island, New York, I mean, I think it was that area where Trump was, they used to have like codes, building codes that basically said, or town ordinances, you know, covens, that you can't transfer this property to black people. Now, I'm not talking like in the 1800s or the 1700s. This is 20th century stuff. And I don't know that that's unique necessarily in the country, but just to give you a sense, even though it's about not even an hour maybe from some of the most diverse places in the country, it's Long Island is the home of Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly, just to give you a taste. And so this is, I mean, by the time I was like living, I think in Cambridge and Somerville, Massachusetts, my fear started to become of like basically of white suburban teenagers because of this quality. I mean, I sort of grew up in not quite this type of area, but there's a quality to this that I recognize. If you've ever been to the bleachers during like a Yankees Red Sox game, really in either city, you'll get what's going on here a little bit. Except for this is a political rally, and these guys are really bigoted, I think. But listen to this.
We are going to have a strong border. We are going to build the wall. It will be a real wall. A real wall.
A real one. I really do think we're probably just a few, I don't know, weeks away from him sort of coming out with this type of regal music. Just marching around the stage. There it is. And he is up over 52% in New York. We'll talk more about this. You had Ted Cruz head up to the Bronx, and I think he's going up to the Bronx for some reason because strategically he thinks that's one of the few places, or he thought, I think, I should probably say, one of the few places where he can win, and it's all about congressional districts. He's got to get over a certain threshold to be eligible for anything, and he is way behind here. But we will get to more of that in the future. A couple of house cleaning notes, ladies and gentlemen. Your membership makes this show possible. Period. End of story. And as a way of saying thank you to you for supporting the program, we give you a fun half where we're more fun. And it's hilarious at times. Sometimes it's a little bit tense. Sometimes there's fights. Right, Kelly?
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. See, so it's that's why it's fun, because you get to watch, you get to hear some funny jokes, and we make fun of some people, and we play some video, and then you get to experience other people's tension. That what's more fun than that? My funnest, I'd say, like, the thing that I like the most is hearing other people's children scream and cry. Like, to hear another baby cry that I don't have responsibility for is the most liberating feeling in the world. Put me on a plane with a kid who's just screaming for 4 hours, and if it's not my kid, that is music to my ears. Just the idea that...
We've got anger for a reason!
Just the idea that somebody else is having to deal with that makes me smile. And that I don't have to, like, I hear the baby, and, like, your first instinct is like, oh, crap! And then you realize, like, I don't have to answer that. It's not my baby. Oh, great. So that's what I'm just saying. There's a lot of that in the fun half. So become a member today. And if you can't afford it and you want to be, you want that experience, then send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Folks, give me a little time on the emails, because I'm always behind. I'm always, like, sometimes a week behind more. So bear with us and become a member today. You go to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop. If you ever, you have heard me say them probably 1,500 times, if you listen to this show since its beginning. If you were a Break Room Alive fan with when Mara and I were doing it, you heard it then. If you listen to WTF, you hear it then. Here's an opportunity for you. You've never tried it. You want to try it. But you're like, I don't know. Is it worth it? 30% off in the month of April. 30% off. Free shipping, 30% off. Free shipping, 30% off. Use the code MRSPRING16. MRSPRING16. Use that code. Get 30% off. Try the Majority Report blend. Give it to a friend. Give it to an enemy. Maybe that's a way you guys will create some peace in your life. Coffee. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Felix Salmon. We are back, Sam Seder on the Majority Report. I don't know. The jury's still out about that. I appreciate Matt's trying to be thematic, but I don't know if I could hear that. On the phone, it is a pleasure to welcome to the program senior editor at Fusion.com, Felix Salmon. Fusion
dot net.
Dot net. I'm sorry.
Dot net. We've moved beyond .com, Sam. We're now .net.
.com is so 2004. You guys have totally.
Dude, you're like 1998.
It's actually
seriously.
Actually, it's sad, but that is actually true. I would probably put me closer to 93. I'm just hearing about it from friends. So Fusion was one of two American outlets that engaged in this, I wouldn't call it crowdsourcing, journalistic sourcing. Tell us the process on how this document dump or leak was combed over.
So it was all done through the auspices of this amazing international nonprofit called ICIJ, the International Committee of Investigative Journalism. And what they did is they wound up putting together a consortium of about 400 journalists from countries all over the world, often not the biggest news organizations in each country, but the most collaborative. And we all basically just came together to pore over 11.5 million documents that we had managed to obtain from this law firm in Panama, Mossack Fonseca. And between us, we found a whole bunch of stories. And, you know, we've seen a lot of them already, and there are more to come. But there's just an astonishing It's so hard to do this kind of work and so time consuming. It's taken a year already, and it's not even close to being over yet.
All right, and I'm going to circle back to sort of some of these meta questions and discussion of the process, because I know there was, you know, a sort of a, I guess, an encrypted Facebook or a sharing site that was developed, and then I want to ask about, you know, what the potential sources of this could have been, and what the implications are of that. But it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I'd like you to expand on this, but there seems to be basically three primary reasons why one would use these services. One is money laundering, the other is tax evasion, and the other is evading international sanctions. Is that sort of a broadly speaking, the categories of stories that we're looking at here? And just to expand on those three areas, if you could.
So, yes, all three of those things are going on. It's important to note that those are probably the three top illegal reasons why you'd want to use these services. There are perfectly legal reasons why you might want to use these services as well, and it's probably fair to assume that most of what Mossack Fonseca is doing is actually legal, which doesn't mean it's not scandalous. You know, as in so many of these things, often the scandal isn't what's illegal, the scandal is what's legal. But in general, you know, I think you can more or less just take it up a whole other level of broadness from what you were talking about and say the reason why you create these companies is to hide your identity, you know, from whomever, from the people doing the international sanctions, from the tax authorities, from, you know, the person you're getting divorced from, you know, you're trying to hide assets, from whoever it is. If you, you know, if you're, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're Vladimir Putin or if you're just some, you know, book author in the United States, if you don't want people to know where your assets are or, you know, things like that, then you can sort of hide them offshore in these shell companies.
Okay, so so give us a sense of the process. And let's, I don't know, let's start with the Prime Minister of Iceland. He seems to be a rather...
I still don't know whether he's resigned or not. It's a little bit unclear.
He seems to have just sort of taken a sabbatical of sorts. in some, like, sort of just stepped away. I'm going to take some paid vacation for a couple of days, a couple of personal days. But I mean, what did he do, and where did he get this money? And what, just use this as a sort of an illustration of what someone might do if one was the Prime Minister of Iceland and you wanted to do what he did.
So again, like, there's insofar, I don't think he did anything illegal. I mean, I think he failed to disclose some highly pertinent information, which the electorate of Iceland suddenly felt that it should have been told. Basically, that he owned a bunch of bonds from the big Icelandic banks, which he was in charge of restructuring. So this is important information. He had a conflict, and he didn't tell anyone about the conflict, and he put the bonds in an offshore shell company where no one knew about them. And that is, you know, what you might say an almost archetypal example of the lack of transparency. The point of these shell companies is to provide opacity for people who want opacity. And the principals of Mossack Fonseca have come out and said, you know, this is an attack on privacy. And in a little way it is, you know, that what we're saying, what the people of Iceland are saying, is that no, you don't get to secretly own a bunch of bank bonds and not tell us. We, you know, deserve to know that information, and it's not cool if you hide those bonds offshore, even if, you know, you paid all of the tax you were meant to pay, and even if everything you did was perfectly legal.
I mean, it does seem to me, particularly in that case, too, that, right, you would have a That's not just an appearance of a conflict of interest. Like there,
that is a conflict of interest.
Yes. Like this is not just a question. This is not one of those situations where the cover up is worse than the non crime per se. It seems to me that if he sort of announced, like, "Hey, incidentally, I'm also going to invest in these banks," essentially, and knowing where they're going to end up on the end or other end of this process. It seems to me that I would, were I an Icelandic citizen, I'd be a little bit upset about that.
And it seems like half of Iceland did, turn out in the main square of Reykjavik to demonstrate and cause his resignation, which then he seems to have changed his mind about whether he resigned or not. But yeah, it's like Iceland as a country is scandalized by this, to the point at which the new prime minister, if there ever does get a new prime minister as a result of this, might well be the head of the Pirate Party, this, you know, kind of ultra-anarchist party, which is very Icelandic and just says anyone can do anything, because it does erode your faith in the rule of law and in the idea that your representatives are representing you rather than just their own interest.
We're getting a little ahead of where I want to go, but we can circle back. But that was one of the things I wanted to ask you about, this sort of broadly speaking, because we have yet to see really a lot of American involvement in this, and I want to talk about why that may be the case in a minute. But so I think it's harder for us here in the States to get a sense of what the implications are of this, not just, you know, on the career of for the Prime Minister of Iceland or, you know, the President of Ukraine Putin, which I have a feeling it probably won't, affect his political trajectory too much. But in terms of just the mood of the people of these countries who are going to be impacted, or, you know, and presumably, right? I mean, in Germany, it may not be high government officials, but just the sense that there is the 1%, but broadly speaking, the sense that, like, there's a tremendous amount of unfairness and corruption in some way going on. Is that a thing in these countries right now? I mean,
to ask the question is to answer it. Of course, yeah. I mean, people around the world are up in arms about the shenanigans of the 1%. And what you find, and you're absolutely right, that you find this more in other countries than you do in the United States, is the international, what you might call the internationalization or the offshoreization of the wealth of the 1%. You find, and this has been going on in Europe for as long as I can remember, that, you know, people have set up accounts in the Channel Islands or in Luxembourg or something like that, and then it moves to the British Virgin Islands and it moves to the Cayman Islands, and often people move there because in every country except for the United States, if you leave a country, you no longer need to pay tax in that country. American citizens are almost unique in being taxed on their global income wherever they live, anywhere in the world. So for Americans, it's slightly different. And America has its own tax shelters in places like Nevada and Delaware. So the need to go offshore is lower in the United States because, again, the scandal isn't what's illegal. The scandal is what's legal. The scandal is that you can protect assets right here domestically in the United States and pay no tax on them. And remember also that the United States, being the global hegemon, has much less sort of political risk that your assets are going to be seized by the government or confiscated. You don't need to protect them from the government or hide them from the government necessarily, because there's less chance that the government is going to turn around and just confiscate everything you own because, you know, it's Ukraine.
Is it also possible that Maseko Fonseca, there's a more American friendly firm? In other words, I mean, are these the only guys doing this type of thing in terms of a law firm, or are there other firms in maybe in Panama or maybe somewhere else that just sort of get more referrals from American corporations.
Absolutely. So the referrals that we're seeing to Mossack Fonseca are coming overwhelmingly from places like Luxembourg and the Channel Islands. And Luxembourg and the Channel Islands tend to be, you know, the places where the European rich bank, right? So where do the American rich bank? I don't know, Miami or, you know, we don't know. And of course, like, there's a million law firms, there's a million private wealth managers, there's a whole world of very shadowy professionals who exist to try and optimize people's taxes and make sure that, you know, create companies and structures which make sure that people's wealth can remain confidential. And, you know, if it's confidential, then maybe, hey, you know, we can get away with not paying taxes on it. But I don't want to speculate too much about whether and to what degree Americans are doing the kind of things that we're seeing other people do in these documents. But I can tell you that there are Americans in these documents, and that, you know, we haven't seen all of the Americans in the documents. There's more news yet to come out.
Okay, so that's obviously you have certain, I guess, parameters from confidentiality aspect. But are there to the extent that this is broken through in this country as a story, are there names in there that you think are going to end up on the nightly news? Let's put it that way.
I don't really want to speculate about that.
Okay.
I do think that the very big story here, rather than trying to drill down into individual scandals about individual people who are keeping money offshore, and remember that, again, you know, it's not what's illegal, it's what's legal. I mean,
right.
We saw this when we looked at Mitt Romney's tax returns, right, and all of his crazy offshore vehicles that he had. And it was all legal, and he was doing a great job of, you know, shielding a whole bunch of assets and taxes, and he had, you know, the world's largest 401k, and everyone was like, how do you get a 401k with, you know, tens of millions of dollars? And my 401k, I can only max out at, like, $7,000 a year. So it's, there's a bunch of stuff which, I guess all I would say is just look at Mitt Romney, you know?
Right.
That was news when Mitt Romney was running for president. But if he wasn't running for president, would it have been news? I don't know.
Hmm. All right. So will you cough twice if it's Trump that you're talking? I'm joking. But what about, give us a couple of a sense of the stories that you have reported on, or that your folks at Fusion have reported on. What are the ones that you found to be most surprising or disturbing?
Sam, I'm a very cynical journalist, and it's hard to surprise me or shock me. You know, I mean, you know, you discover that Lionel Messi has a bunch of offshore companies to deal with his endorsement deals, or that Vladimir Putin might not actually be getting by on a civil servant salary. And, you know, and I'm not necessarily going to be massively shocked by
right.
that. And, you know, again, for the purposes of stories and journalism, you want to write stories about the kind of people that people have heard of, you know, the celebrities and politicians and that kind of stuff. And the fact that celebrities, you know, politicians and celebrities might have a bunch of money that they want to hide offshore, again, it's not that shocking
right.
to me. You know, the sheer size of the network, the fact that you have, like, one poor woman in Panama who's apparently a corporate officer of 20,000 different companies, just enormousness, the hundreds of thousands of shell companies that Mossack Fonseca has set up over the years for various banks and individuals. And, you know, that was like, whoa, this is huge. I had no idea just how big this was. Even, you know, as you say, this is just one more firm in Panama. It's not like these guys had some kind of monopoly on this business.
So what? So what happens? Like people at they're at a Davos and they all they run into somebody at a coffee shop and they're just like, where do you keep your money that you're trying to hide from your future ex-wife or when you're when you guys are trying to sell weapons to North Korea? Where do you do your shell company business? I mean, is that basically what happens?
That's an incredibly good question. So the historically, the nexus was, and then when I say historic, it was Swiss banks, basically, and their kin. So you'd go to UBS or Credit Suisse, and you'd have your private banker, and then they would know the tricks of the trade, and they would be hooked in with Mossack Fonseca, and they would know how to do these things. And then private banking has moved, internationally. It's not all in Switzerland anymore, and it's not necessarily the biggest Swiss banks anymore. But we do see a lot of HSBC in newspapers. There are other ways in. There's a lot of what's known as family offices, and there's a lot of very, very secret meetings of people who work for family offices. And, family office is a euphemism for basically, the people whose entire job is to just manage the money of people who are incredibly rich. And they go to meetings in expensive hotels and they quietly talk about tax optimization strategies or something. And they'll learn about the services offered by Mossack Fonseca and people like them. And yeah, there's a whole network which is not public. And, you can't just like wander into these things if you're a journalist or if you're not in charge of a few hundred million dollars. But they happen all the time.
And so, I mean, do we have any sense, or let me put it this way. Do you guys have any sense, or does the German newspaper that received the first, the dump, or the leak, do they have any sense of who's behind it?
Not as far as I know. It was all done over encrypted communication with someone who was very careful not to reveal their identity. And so it's unclear to me, at least, whether this person ever worked with Mossack Fonseca, whether it was just someone who managed to hack the client website of Mossack Fonseca, which apparently had a bunch of weaknesses. But, I don't know how the information was obtained, and frankly, it doesn't really matter. The important thing is that we have now not only obtained the information, but we've spent a lot of time and done a lot of effort in sort of going through it and trying to find stories. And as I say, those stories are not over yet.
How did the consortium determine when this stuff was going to go out? I mean, did they say, like, you guys, everybody's got a year, we're going to put this out within a year? Or was it the journalists sort of all voted and said, we've got what we feel like we need at this point? Or how did that determination happen?
That was determined centrally by the ICIJ, and they were in touch with all of the news organizations around the world, and they wanted to make sure that we all had enough time to have a bunch of really good stories, on Sunday, and that they wanted all of these stories, a whole bunch of stories to appear on Sunday, on like day one. Not all of the stories that people are working on have been finished. So as I say, you will see more and more stories coming out in the days and weeks ahead. The question of like who was going to set the day and time for like that initial big push of like all these stories appearing around the world, that was the ICIJ basically making the determination after talking to all of the news organizations that at that point, more or less everyone should be able to publish a big story at least.
And do you have a sense of what this means for the future? I mean, I guess part of it is, and I don't know if we'll ever know, who leaked this. I mean, right? I mean, I've heard some speculation that it was the U.S. government as a way of, perhaps embarrassing certain people who are named in these documents. Seems to me it could also be rival law firm, right? I mean, Like, I mean, if I was one of these people's clients, I'd be right now, I'd be looking for a different law firm because they can't keep my stuff secret, it seems like. What does this mean going forward? I mean, is this stuff going to be actionable in specific countries? Is it going to have implications for more of these documents? I mean, I presume we're going to see more of these, right?
It's going well. We may or may not, but I think the first big effect that it's had, and it's happening already, is that the KYC laws, the Know Your Customer laws in banking, have been tightened up significantly already, just in reaction to this leak. And the banks, if they do any business in the U.S., which means every bank in the world, pretty much, aren't allowed to just say, oh, this money belongs to XYZ company in the British Virgin Islands. They have to know who the beneficial owner of that company is. And that's an important change.
Wow. So they have to, does that mean there's no more shell companies? I mean,
The shell companies are there, but the bank, if you're dealing with a bank, and obviously if you're dealing with money, then you're going to be dealing with a bank. You can't really transfer money without going through a bank in one way or another. And then if you're going through a bank and and money is sloshing in and out of Cayman Island companies, then the law now says basically that the bank needs to know not only the name of the company, but also the beneficial owner of the company.
So they can see through essentially these shells.
That's the idea, yes.
And so
that's known as KYC. And KYC has been around for a long time. But what we've seen in recent years is that KYC has been beefed up and it's getting stronger and stronger. And the more, you know, it's a little bit of a game of cat and mouse, you know, that people like, you know, there was a bunch of lawyers out there who are going to do their best to try and get around even the new beefed up KYC laws. This industry is not going to shrivel up and die overnight.
Right.
But I think, you know, as I say, one of the reasons why we haven't seen a huge number of Americans in this league so far is the kind of banking secrecy, which has been quite common in places like Switzerland or Luxembourg or the Channel Islands, has never really been the case in the U.S.
And so the beefed up KYC rules, this will allow essentially governments doing investigations to track this stuff, right? I mean, there's not going to have any implications. Not like this stuff is going to go in the newspapers. And it's just that going forward, there's going to be more access to this, so that's going to help in the illegal stuff, right?
Right. So there's a bunch of different things. There's KYC, which is know your customer. There's AML, which is anti-money laundering. There's ATF, which is anti-terrorist finance. And yeah, all of those things are designed so that banks, by law, have to tell regulators, have to tell the authorities if they see anything suspicious.
Interesting. Felix Salmon, thank you so much for your time today. People can read more at fusion.net.
That's the one.
All right. Thanks so much, Felix. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Cheers.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Interesting stuff. I got the sense that something big is coming. Did you get that sense?
Yeah.
I mean, there was a very pregnant pause when I asked him that, yeah, like extremely pregnant. Now, it's also, it could be cultural, right? I mean, I detected a slight accent. And so, I mean, I'm no investigator myself, but I did detect a slight accent. And so that could have been cultural. That pause could have been cultural.
You know what I think the scoop is?
What's that?
David Cameron is heavily invested in pork bellies.
Really? Oh, Matt, it's going so well after you played that Panama song. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. Hey, don't forget, if you buy your crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at majoritireportkickback.com. Wait, what? Amazon? I don't want to buy from Amazon. F Jeff Bezos. I'd rather buy from jet.com because they have... I mean, I haven't done, I don't have the capacity to do like a full-on price comparison, but They have a good worker relations record. They're doing all sorts of good stuff. Jet.com. Well, can I buy through there, Sam? Yes, you can. Go to MajorityReportKickback.com. Click on the Jet.com link. Get 15% off your first purchase. See that? We have many, many ways. Tomorrow on the program, I believe we have Cliff Schechter and Michael Ian Black will be joining us to suggest a film recommendation. Kelly apparently is happy about that. Are you a fan of Michael Ian Black's?
Yeah, who isn't? Are there people that aren't?
I would imagine. I mean, things get a little tense with
they
him
do.
And I. all right, folks. See you in the fun half. 646-257-3920 if you want to be a part of it.